Lori Bell. That's Lurie Bell, guitarist and singer, blues, obviously, blues guitarist and singer, with Don't Let the Devil Ride, written by blues and gospel singer extraordinaire, the Reverend Gary Davis, also known as Blind Gary Davis, for his mastery of blues and gospel singing, and for his mastery of the banjo, guitar, and harmonica. Reverend Gary Davis was born in 1896 in Lawrence, South Carolina, died in 1972 in Hammondtown, New Jersey, at the age of 76. This is from Lurie Bell's 2012 CD, The Devil Ain't Got No Music. Plain and simple. The Devil Ain't Got No Music. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we're picking up from where we left off yesterday. The discussion was and will be about developments in the George Floyd case. Minneapolis ex-cop Derek Chauvin appealing his conviction on state murder and manslaughter charges in the killing of George Floyd last year, now faces federal charges related to the same crime. Chauvin, 37, and three other fired cops, Do Dao, 34, J. Alexander Quang, 26, and Thomas Lane, 37, face a laundry list of charges, including aiding and abetting second-degree murder and second-degree manslaughter, second-degree unintentional murder, third-degree murder, and second-degree manslaughter. They were indicted on the federal charges on Friday. Their trials begin in August. Chauvin was convicted last month on state murder and manslaughter charges for his key role in causing Floyd's death during a brutal attempted arrest. The question we raised yesterday was, if these new charges stick and all four officers are found guilty in the federal trial, will that finally close the case? We had quite an overflow of people calling in, and we couldn't get them in to the program. But I believe firmly, as you know, everybody has to have their say. So we reopened the program today to accommodate those who were not able to participate by way of expressing their point of view. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. 888-874-4888. This case, of course, is already a pivotal case, because it raises so many questions about police conduct and official conduct, but it also raises questions about what are people prepared to do about the situation? What is the role or the anticipated role of the people? And in that regard, you find a hesitancy about people not wanting, they don't quite know what to say, or they don't want to express what they think for fear that they may be talking out of turn, that they don't know the procedures and so forth. But don't be afraid of that. You have an opinion. And the question is simple and straightforward. If everything goes as the people expect, let's say, and all the charges were to stick to these officers being charged, is that the end of the case? or is there some other thing that needs, or things that need to happen? 888-874-4888. Now, when I open up the phones, I like to see names there that are ready to go. I don't see a name yet, and that means that you're either a little bit, I don't take it all back, because I just got confirmation. We haven't gotten your call yet. But you see, this is really what community organizing is all about, and what empowerment is all about. You have to talk about these things. And somewhere or somehow you may find a consensus of opinion. You may not find a consensus of opinion, and you have to be prepared for that. But the main thing is that people are being engaged. See, I'm one of those people who gets upset when people start saying, well, they should have done this, and they should have done that, and they should have done the other, when everything is all wrapped up. And while the iron is hot, nobody's pounding on it to shape it the way they want. So at some point, we'll have to deal with the fact that we're getting mixed messages. I see a G7. I don't go by nicknames on this program. Everybody has a name. Just tell us your name. It belittles when you do that, start using handles for your name. To give the impression that you don't want to be known. We are not like that on this program. We know each other, or we want to know each other. So let us know who you are when you're calling in, and don't use all these fancy-dancy names that really are not you. Let's not do that. Jeremiah from Harlem, you're on the air.
Hear me, Utrice?
Yes, hello? You're on the air.
Oh, there. Okay, there we go. I must confess. First of all, good afternoon. Thank you, as always.
Thank you.
I must confess, I'm fairly ignorant as far as the details of this case. I mean, I've seen some of the horrific footage. I've listened to your program. I've kept up a little bit, but like many callers have suggested, you know, the whole thing is just so stressful. It's just a little hard to look at. You know, a lot of people are under, you know, pressure and stress of the current situation, and it's kind of hard to willfully add to that. But I've seen these cases transpire throughout my lifetime as an American African in the United States. And, you know, I'm just looking at this whole society, and I'm just seeing a society that's just doing everything wrong, but wants to go about their business like they're doing everything right. And, you know, I think I've said this before on your program, but I think the very notion of the police is just a very abstract concept that we should really question. The idea of a designated force that is going to remove the harmful people from society, quote, as everyone else goes about their commercial business, buying and participating in the economy and so on. I mean, if you look at this particular case, and now...
Let me interrupt you for a second. Let me interrupt you. You're not addressing the question.
I was just about to. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Which is that, you know, if you look at, in this case, I would like these officers to be punished for standing by as their colleague murdered a man in front of them and before the community. It's just a horrific thing that they participated in. But we really have to answer the bigger question of, well, why was it so automatic for none of them to intercede? It was established that that was not police protocol, that was not police training, and none of them were aware of that. So, you know, they did not murder George Floyd in the manner in which Chauvin did, but they were unaware of any protocol that would have prevented that death, which seems to me to be clearly an indictment of the system itself, that we have officers on the streets that are going to harm the community in this manner. And between the group of them, none of them were aware that this isn't police protocol and this isn't proper conduct before the citizens.
Well, we don't know if they were not aware. We know that they did not seem to express it or in some way show that they were very much aware. No police officer could get away with an explanation that they weren't aware that a police officer should not, you know, jam his knee into a person's neck until they pretty much die.
Well, they weren't aware to the extent that they found themselves in this situation.
And training for that.
Well, I mean, they weren't aware insofar as they find themselves in this situation now. Now they're on trial. So now they're aware this wasn't good protocol. They might have thought a little bit differently about it if they had any foresight into what was about to occur in terms of their entire lives being on the line at this point.
But I have to now ask you, how is it they were not aware? But all these people who were gathering and screaming for this treatment of George Floyd to stop, they seemed to be aware. People who had no police training, no police experience, they seemed to know that that was wrong, very, very wrong. And they were doing everything they could to stop it.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I think that, you know, a good friend of mine said years ago, and it might sound cynical, but I just think it's true, which is that, you know, all this talk about, you know, a few bad apples is totally wrong. When you're talking about the police, I mean, I'm sorry to offend anybody, but you're talking about a barrel of rotten apples at this point. And what do you do when you have a barrel of rotten apples? Do you go rummaging through the barrel, hoping you can find a good one? No, you have to dump the barrel. And I think that's where we are at this point. Is that, you know, the videos of police brutalizing protesters after, you know, some of these instances occurred and then the street protests. I mean, you have police officers shoving people to the ground, people getting their head busted open on the pavement, and none of the police officers there went to help the person. They just kept marching down the street like stormtroopers. I mean, there was the elderly man in Buffalo, New York. There was a young woman who got shoved and pushed right into a curb, suffered, you know, concussion, major injury. No police officer stopped her. They all or stopped to check on her. They all marched right by like Gestapo stormtroopers.
Well, that essentially is a charge against Quang and against Lane and against Tao that they aided and abetted second degree murder by not stopping what they saw, which is Chauvin attacking George Floyd and increasing the agitation of people who were looking on and screaming for and pleading for the treatment of George Floyd to stop. So that
right,
is part of the indictment that they must answer at the federal level.
Right. And that raises a question in my mind, Beatrice, which is, you know, is it possible to, you know, go a step beyond now and sue the Minneapolis Police Department, saying, how do you have these maniacs on the street? Sue the people who are training them.
You're getting somewhere. And that is implicit in the question. Therefore, your response is no, even if all of the charges stuck. It's still not a complete response to the issue at hand.
No,
and
it's a Band-Aid on a hemorrhage.
More must be done.
Absolutely.
So
it's a Band-Aid on a hemorrhage.
Could you itemize what you think? What itemize in your head what it is you think should be done in such a situation?
You mean pertaining to the particular trial or across society?
In a trial, because we're talking about assuming, we're making a big assumption.
You know,
that the
I have to say,
then what?
I find it so I find it so difficult to answer that question because honestly, you know, to me, it's just all pain on top of pain on top of pain. You know, so one thing that my late father said, and I think it's a true statement, is that justice is a dubious concept. You know, unfortunately, George Floyd is not being brought back to life. So those men can be put in jail, and they probably belong there, and they'll be punished and live their lives in anguish. And unfortunately, it doesn't make the world a happier place. Maybe it makes the world a safer place, but that takes us to the whole other issue of the treatment of people in prisons. In the statement by Dostoevsky that, you know, you can judge a civilization by the treatment.
We still have to react. We still should have an answer about from your perspective.
Well, you know what I would do in my ideal society? I would train those people to be human beings. I would teach them how to farm. I would have them removed from society, and I would say I'd have them address every day of their lives how what they did was wrong. And to understand that. And maybe they can be reformed and be actual servants of the people at some point.
Okay. Thank you for your opinion today. Thanks for your contribution. Victor from Connecticut. Victor Garcia, you're next.
Peace and blessing, young lady. How are you today?
Okay. Thank you, Victor. How are you?
I am just peachy. Thank you very much. I just would like to just state that I usually say G7, and if I can just briefly tell you why, I am in transition.
Tell me why.
I am in transition. You say, no, don't tell you or tell you?
No, don't tell me. All I wanted to make clear was we're on a show, and a serious one, I was hoping, and we don't need to go by code names or things like that. It somehow takes away from the seriousness of the moment. So you personally making a contribution, let's hear from you, not G7.
So if Malcolm X was to call, you would say, do not use X because that is not your name?
You're starting a fight.
You see, I'm just asking you because I'm in a transition from my name and I'm going to change my name. Do I need permission from you? Because, you know what I'm saying? If this is how I want to be referred, I want to respect you and I respect your show, but I'm just trying to make another point too, that if I'm trying to make a transition in my own name.
It's a very important point when you think about it. Is it more important to you to be called whatever it is you envision being more important than your name to be called? Do you insist across the board that you be referred to as G7 at work in your profession?
Everybody refers to me at work, and everyone that knows me refers to me as G7 because I'm trying to get away from my slave name. But, you know, to address your show, I will say my slave name, Victor Garcia, just to make sure, because I want to make sure that, you know, I want to respect your show, but at the same time, I want us to respect each other. But if you don't want me to say G7, I won't.
No,
it's your show.
I told you my version of that. People have done this before and have said exactly the same thing. We are a community here, and we form a community and continue our community by just being open about who we are. And one of the ways we do that is by name. You know, I could tell you my name is A57. But
if you're known in the radio, if you're known on the radio and everybody knows you by that, then I respect whatever you tell me. But anyway, moving right along, but it's all cool. But I just want to, you know, just let you know, I'm not trying to be funny, you know, and I respect you very much and I respect your show. So if you feel more comfortable with my slave name, I'll be more than happy to use it. Victor Garcia. Okay, but you know what? Okay, now to address the issue. So hopefully in the future, you know. And I do love you, and I just want to make sure I don't want no problems with the show because you have a beautiful show. And guess you know something? I'm so honored because people like me, the audience, get a chance to speak. In very few shows, we have a chance to call in. So thank you for what you do. And I know that, you know, the thin line with people like me and others, but I respect you in the show. But you know what I feel, Utrice? I feel that as long as we have Rex 84 and the King Alfred plan, people don't understand that that's a law, a national security resolution, that says in the event of trouble that the United States of America, the president, the secretary of state, all the military intelligence agency, the FBI, what they do is they militarize, or the army is already militarized, right? And they recruit the right-wing militias to be deputized. They remove Congress members from Congress, and they have the right to lock us up. So why do you think,
why are you so far off our topic and expecting me to go there with you?
Okay, I'm sorry. I thought the topic was what can we do and what should happen in order for them to get a fair trial or for us to support the conviction to lead more than what it is? I'm sorry.
The question posed was, if all of these charges should stick, I mean, let's just suppose that. If all of these charges should stick, is that the end of this case?
No.
Okay.
And the reason why is I try to explain why, because this represents not only this case, but this represents policing throughout the United States of America, and also affects the white ring supremacists that know that there's a law on the book. Even though we have a black vice president in the United States that says that she can be imprisoned, and the rest of the Congress people at a stroke of a pen. As long as they know that and no one changes that, it doesn't matter, because all the police officers know that. All the police departments in the world, in the United States of America, they know that the plan says no matter what no one says, we have a right to do what we do, because the law says that we can either imprison them and eliminate them. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but as long as that stays in place, right, the whole policing in America will never change, because the white militias know they can come with the AR-15s and they can march with the police, and the police know they know the law. They will be deputized. That's why you see them, and the guy was able to commit murder and walk away. Why do we think? Because the right wing and the racist police know that these white militias are being deputized. And as long as the as long as they can kill us and not be sued. Okay, so, but they know what's going on. We don't know what's going on. So even though they can be convicted, the whole culture of police, once the president makes an announcement, guess what? The national security resolution is rescinded, then that's going to bring chills all throughout the police department and say, guess what? The plan is not to kill them no more. Right now, the plan is to eliminate us and to get away with it, and nothing is being done because it's state-sponsored murder.
Let me admit something to you. You're on to something, but you haven't developed your argument fully. So I want to ask you to do that as your homework. Because we're looking at a specific case occurring at a specific time in our collective history. And how do we use this case? How is this case to be relevant to us? How is this case supposed to create a better society if
it could give us a flashlight?
Don't answer now. Okay. I want you to think about the question, because I think you're getting to the nut of it, but it is still way too wide, and you have to develop your argument a little bit more.
I tell you what, I respect your journalism, and I will take it from there. Fair enough? I appreciate it. Can I still be G7?
Is it really important to be G7?
Yeah, I don't want to say G7. Then I don't never get on the air no more, because I know that when I say G7, I sort of hung up on me.
But is it important to you to be G7?
Yes, because I'm trying to get away from the slavery name. This Victor Garcia is my slave name, just like Toby. He didn't want to be known as Toby, and he was almost whipped to death. Yeah, Victor Garcia is my slave name. I'm sorry, but I'm trying to get rid of it. But everybody knows me. G7, my job, everybody. And I'm not trying to hide nobody. I'm Victor Garcia from Bedford, Connecticut.
I therefore submit and G7 it is.
You know something? Thank you very much. And listen, one last thing. Stop intimidating the men, because men be calling saying they're afraid to talk to you. I mean, come on. They said they have to do homework. Oh, now I see why. Wait a minute. I see why. You give them homework. And they say, oh.
It is well, for your own good, because what is the sense in having a program that does you no good? You leave the same way you came. You're not elevated, you're not motivated, you're not educated. In the course of a program, what's the point? So sure, do some homework, a little bit, and do a little bit more the next time.
And I'm so happy that your dad set you down and made you do homework. it gave you all those lessons of life that now you can share with the rest of us and make all of us strong. But stop scaring the men. Stop scaring the men. They're scared to call. They say you're going to intimidate them and they say, oh, I'm not ready for you. You're so smart. I love you. Talk to you soon.
I love you too, Victor. Thank you. Sorry, G7. Thank you so much for calling in and contributing in such a
way. And I will do my homework. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thanks for that, too. I really appreciate it. Patricia from New York, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Eutrice, and good afternoon to the PRN family. I hope all is well.
Thank you, and good afternoon to you, Patricia.
You know, in terms of what should happen after all of the police officers have had their day in court, I think I want to start first with the Minneapolis Police Department, because while they closed that blue wall of silence, it really does not absolve them of the responsibility for Derek Chauvin and the others, because for the last 20 years, there was almost a case a year where there was a complaint made against Derek Chauvin. As a matter of fact, recently the 14-year-old who experienced a similar fate as George Floyd appears to have, at least, although late, shared his story. And so the fact that he was allowed to continue for almost 20 years says that they need to do some serious internal introspection as to why that was allowed. And then that needs to be exported across the country. I think depending upon the outcome of this case with the other four officers, it may give the other police departments pause, especially as now the Justice Department is beginning. We have a new Justice Department and we have, you know, new higher cops on board. Who appear, and I use that word loosely, who appear to give the presence that they intend to address these issues. But internally, every police department, beginning with the Minneapolis, has to say, you know, maybe we need to look, we need to look at how we conduct ourselves. And we need to answer the question why we allowed him to continue to exist for so long. And then hopefully their example will be the beacon light for everyone else. At least that is my hope.
In the punitive sense, I mean, what you're saying is very well received and it is very ambitious. But it is my experience that institutions, having existed on their own, doing their own thing for so long, and most often it's the wrong thing, are never made to pay a price. What is the price to be paid here for any police department that runs afoul of, quote, the law?
See, the problem is that we look externally to others to make the police departments pay. We don't make the police departments pay, and the people have to make the police departments pay. Now, how do you make them pay? Well, first of all, you change the rules as to who pays for whatever trauma individuals experience at their hands. Right now, we are, they have their literally feet on our necks, and then we turn around and have to pay for the privilege of being abused and traumatized. And that has to stop. The public has to say enough. The people have to say enough. But as I always maintain, unfortunately, the people are very passive right now. The people can no longer be passive if they want something different to occur. It is insane. The definition of insanity is to continue to be passive and expect the system to change. The system will not change from inside. The system has to be forced to change from the outside. And we're not prepared to do that. And so we continue to be traumatized.
Is there an interim plan? Is there something that could happen in between time?
I think people need to begin to verbalize quite loudly what it is that needs to happen, the change that needs to occur within the system, how the system needs to be broken, how the system needs to be reshaped. People need to have a specific vision for what that should look like, and they need to begin to verbalize that while the other system transformations are ongoing before they occur.
Thank you.
The people have to decide, and then they have to execute it. And unfortunately, we're not, we're asleep.
Yes. But thankfully, you're very clear, and we are very happy to hear you share your clarity. Thanks so much, Patricia, for calling in today.
Thank you.
From Queens, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Eucharis. How are you doing?
Okay, good afternoon to you.
Yes. I want to start by saying clarity of vision is very important. And you've got to stay on point when you're trying to implement change. Number one, the Minneapolis Police Department needs to be put into receivership. The head of the police department, police chief, associated captains of precincts and districts, however they break it down, I don't know, I think they break it down into parishes or counties, they need to be put into an administrative receivership. A federal component needs to be implemented, and they need to be monitored for at least a year, number one. Number two, civilian complaint review board with the power to indict, with the power to pull police officers' records, and with the power to convict and charge police officers, and the power to review records and bring police officers up for stringent review and disciplinary action and dismissal if the record calls for it. Number three, in the future, the office of police officer, any type of office that is dedicated specifically to the management and the administration of police, needs to be held up for electoral office. They need to be made to be personally accountable to the people, and these are the points that need to be stressed in this situation right now. If we can do that, they've done it in Seattle when they took over the police precinct there. They've changed a couple of things as far as how emergency responses are conducted. Police are not involved. There are social worker components. But those are the three major things that need to be pressed and addressed to deal with this specific problem. If the protest can be brought on those major points, those changes might have a reverberation throughout the country.
I agree. How would you begin to implement it in your thinking?
Well, first things first, I would petition the Department of Justice to take the police department in, for want of a better word, a type of federal receivership. We do it with corporations all the time. When corporations violate certain rules of labor or certain rules of production, the federal government steps in, places a competent person in charge or a competent board of people in charge, and we monitor them. We pull up records. We look at procedures. We look at instances. We pull up individuals with histories of police brutality or police misconduct. We had the Knapp Commission. We have the Warren Commission. Remember Serpico? this isn't rocket science. It isn't brain surgery. The mechanisms are there. Hold these people accountable. New York used to be a corrupt bed of police corruption and graft. And then one officer, Serpico, stepped forward. The Knapp Commission, the Warren Commission, corruption got busted up, and it went away. The mechanisms are there. There's no need to overthink this. You know, I mean, the whole Derek Chauvin, these four officers, they are pawns in a game, a giant system. And the system that allowed them to manifest themselves is what we got to attack, not the individuals. The individuals are nothing.
Wow. Very good. Thank you. You've said quite a mouthful today, Ed. And I agree with your point of view, your points of view, plural. Thank you very much for calling in. And
so everybody else does. So everybody else does.
Thank you. Mohammed, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Utrice.
Good afternoon. What have you to say today?
I did a little homework, and I've looked back in the past. Like they say, before we go forward, we need to look in the back mirror to see what's behind us. I think what we could do is organize, unite, set some goals and objectives, and when they don't respond to them, you boycott their businesses, and that will get their attention. That's what they did in the 60s. So that's what I think. I think we need to come together as a people and unite. And when you look at, you're a New York person, so I know when you look at, say, Williamsburg, I mean, just driving through there, you see the unity that those people have, meaning the Hasidic community. And the police are a little skeptical before they go mess with them because they have that organization, they have unity, and they have goals and objectives, and they have a purpose. And they'll be careful how they treat you when you do have an organization and the unity and some goals and objectives, and then you stop patronizing them and their businesses when they don't behave like they should. And when you see the results of when Mr. Chauvin killed George Floyd, the whole world protested. That got their attention because they saw what they was doing was very unjust. And they know it could happen to anyone when you're not united, organized, and have some goals and objectives. Thank you very much for hearing me, Professor Lee. And I hope your health continues
Professor Lee,
to improve.
I haven't been a professor for quite a while now.
Because this is a class, and I did a little homework. Thank you.
Thank you for doing some homework. Thank you so much. Marcus from Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Oh, good afternoon, Utrice. Thank you very much. Another riveting discussion. Whenever we have discussions on this topic, I have found my whole life long, at least since around 1975 or so, we dance around the fact that we have severe limitations on what we are allowed to discuss legally as a response. If you go outside of the acceptable legal nexus of nonviolent talk and response, you are going to get a visit from the State Department. So we face a paradox. How do we nonviolently, peacefully, legally confront an agency, state agency, that has a monopoly on violence? This is our problem. So, number one, I think at some point we have to change the legal limits on how we can discuss these things. The police, as they are, can't be reformed or refined. We discussed that before. It's an occupation force. What we actually require is a neighborhood defense agency that will protect people. The police are charged with protecting property and privilege, the privilege of people with property. So the whole setup is wrong. And that's why it's a force for oppression of the against the many for the benefit of the few. So just looking back at as far as recently as the 1970s, what is the possible range of our response? In the United States, you had the Black Panthers. They saw themselves as citizen regulators. They were involved in neighborhood defense. They not only kept corrupt police out of the neighborhoods, they kept the drug dealers out. They made sure that children got fed and got to school safely and that old people were taken care of. This is what we're after, not tweaking how a fascist police force operates. So our possible range of response, just going back to the 70s, is from what we currently do, which is a devout belief in the magic power of windy gab and hoping a corrupt system will reform itself, to what you had in the 70s, all throughout Europe, all throughout the United States, well, mostly Europe, the urban guerrilla. The RAF in Germany, the M17 in Greece, the Red Brigades in Italy, the Japanese Red Army. These were college students who said, enough of this. They armed themselves. They came up with strategies. They confronted power. They actually kidnapped CEOs of banks. They confronted CIA, police. So this is the possible range of our response. And I bring this up not because I'm advocating anything. I'm not. What I'm bringing up is to point out how narrow our thinking is about our possible range of response, how unimaginative we have become. We have all kinds of actually nonviolent means that we could employ to put pressure on the entire system in order not to convince it to change, that we could actually change the structure of it. We don't do that. The fault, as we've discussed, you and I together many times, the fault is with us. This childish stance that we're going to somehow convince a corrupt system to be nice is childish. It never happens. It never will. The problem is us. So the question is, we have to face this paradox. How do we confront what is we are actually capable of doing to change this with our own timidity and the fact that we're successfully terrorized by the propaganda of a system that is set up first and foremost to convince us that we are powerless and should be afraid? So the discussion is the right one to have. No, of course it doesn't end with the trial. This will just go on and on and on, and everybody knows it. Everybody is conscious of the limits of acceptable speech, too, but they don't say it. They continue to pretend that they're free. So I would just like to bring this part up. Again, I'm not advocating anything. I don't want a visit from the State Department either. But this is the real nature of the discussion. It's not limited to a narrow political discussion or what tiny little reform do we make and then happily go on our way until it happens again tomorrow. That's silly. Let's grow up and try to confront the real problem, get up the emotional maturity to actually look at the history and see what it is possible for us to do. And then we have to individually confront the fact that if we don't do it, it won't change. I'd love your thoughts on this, you, Therese.
Well, a wonderful presentation, but I'm wondering how practical is it? How practicable, I should say, is it at a time when we understand many people are very clear about the power of the state because they are subjected to it every day. Mm-hmm. Many people in their own ways have tried. I agree with you that we are the ones to be the authors of what the change is going to be. The challenge is, how do we reach that point? How do we convince people that we need to spend some time doing some really deep thinking in order to inform our action?
I've been fortunate enough in the course of my life to teach both adults and children. And I've never had children myself, but as any parent knows, children don't do what you say, they do what you do. People will not follow gab or theory of any kind. They have to see an example of somebody doing it, even if it's a small example. And so this is a problem we've confronted before. There are lots of small examples of it. They're disorganized, they're disconnected, because we don't have a media system that's going to tell us about it. This is where the South American model is so useful. They set up alternative media, neighborhood radio stations, which then began to communicate with each other. They thought differently. They thought way outside of the structure that was given to them and invented structures of their own, put them in place, and adhered to them instead of the official structures. That's the only way we can get people hip to these things and to the point where emotionally and rationally they'll see their way to go ahead with it. But as long as, as long as the international banking media is the only source of information and organization possible, what are we going to do? Go to the mall and have this discussion? You know, that's not going to happen. There isn't even a place available for people to do this sort of thing. So instead of saying, how do we reform this death ship, I'm saying let's rethink what it should look like and try to set these up. Okay, how do we, instead of having a police force, how do we negate the police force and set up an effective neighborhood defense instead of begging the state legislature to or the municipal government to pass a law to notice the thousands of homeless people everywhere? What kind of a structure can we get together and set up and actually start to feed these people? Because that will show, by doing these things, that will show how ineffective and corrupt and what the real agenda of the so-called government and institutions really is and are. There's no other way.
Well, you've given us quite a bit to think about, and it's all good. And I thank you very much for offering
your opinion. I really appreciate your providing this forum. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, that brings us to the end of our program today. We will continue these kinds of conversations because they have been markedly absent. And we are conditioned to kind of react, just react, without necessarily thinking or planning or really getting a sense of where we are going with something new. And what is that something new? It's time for us to just spend some time thinking things through And in limited ways at first, we try them out to see how they're working or if they could be working. But we have to move. We have to keep moving. We can't stand still. We have to keep on moving. I am so proud. I say it all the time, but it's so true. I am so proud to be in your company every day and to hear the quality of your message, the quality of your thinking. It is truly remarkable to me. And it also proves a point. We haven't been listening to each other for a long time. We don't even know what each other is thinking. And this is a good way to get accustomed to the idea of trading thoughts, trading information, and building. That requires us, you know, somebody just nudged me about, you know, doing homework. We have so much homework to do. We do. And it should be to our credit that that one thing alone, if we really come to terms with it and say, well, we realize we can't do things by, you know, flying by the seat of our pants. We have to do our homework and prepare ourselves. But thank you so much for honoring this program the way you do by investing your intellectual effort, and it shows greatly, and I appreciate it. We'll see each other tomorrow on the air. Bye-bye. G7, we'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.